Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 200th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer it to the best of my abilities. The 200th episode of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Obviously, there are more episodes if you really think about it. According to the counter right now, it's over 400. It's 422 episodes altogether, but this is the official 200th Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show episode, and all I can say is that it has been a pleasure to inform everyone about my opinions about American soccer, where it's going, where our national team is heading towards, and everything else that either I will agree with or disagree with when it comes to said leagues in American soccer circles and clubs and everything else that goes on. I am fortunate enough to work with people that I share the Red Bull Arena press box with such talented writers and pundits that have been a part of this game, like Michael Lewis, Brian Lewis, Jack Bell, Frank Giese, Christian Dyer, and a slew of others that are either on my level, above it, or below it. It's also gratifying and very, very lucky to know people from within the circles, whether they are born in this country or they immigrated to this country, to be a part of fun things that I have done at the same time as they have, but obviously a lot more experience than I do, which I will definitely admit. I have some experience, but I don't think I'm at the level of certain people. So let me just say that I am grateful that I was given an opportunity to do something like this a long, long time ago from gentlemen that I was very, very lucky to meet online, obviously, Gary Gazza Richards and Graham Bell and Peter Brown and Diana Germano. I will always remember them, and I will always say that they gave me my first shot to discuss this game that we love so much on the internet, on internet radio, and hopefully we can move on and become mainstream more than just a couple of hours a day. Because sooner or later, we need to get on terrestrial radio, over the airwaves radio, so you can listen to it in your car. Satellite radio probably is the next step, but the truth is this: we need a 24/7 over-the-air radio station to discuss this game that we love so much. You know, to be truthful once again about this, you know, when I went on my own on this venture, and at the time, you know, it's either Blog Talk Radio or Ustream. Obviously, there's more ways to do your own show with that Pandora, that Stitcher, or whatever else is out there. The truth is that this was the one that was for me, and I'm grateful for Blog Talk Radio for allowing me to be a part of this and to discuss the game I love, obviously, with an American opinion, because it does matter what we think about our leagues, the clubs that play in our leagues, and these American players are trying to fight hard just for some form of recognition. But at the same time, they're trying to fight to get into the national team and, of course, possibly going to Europe to work on their talents. Now, all I can say is, on my end of things, is that I've been fortunate enough to work with wonderful people. Once again, wonderful people that have given me an opportunity to be a part of something big, and at the same time, to return that favor because they mean so much to me. They mean so much to me in my heart because they gave me that opportunity, and I want to give that opportunity back to those that wants to be a part of, or they want to be a part of this situation. Because we're all in this together. Of course, there'll be some that might be a little bit more arrogant than others, but what are you going to do? This is the nature of the business. There's nothing you can do. You don't worry about them. You only worry about yourself. But I've lasted this long so far. I've lasted this long so far, and I'm grateful that you good folks out there want to hear my opinion about the game in the United States. You want to hear my opinions about where we're going in the right direction or in the wrong direction to the game in the United States. And no matter what happens, and no matter how it's said or how it's going to be deciphered, it's going to be my opinion and my opinion alone that will set this tone. Of course, I welcome other opinions. I welcome other opinions as well, but still, I am the captain of this ship. Not to sound arrogant about it, because I'm not, but it's my show, and I'm grateful that all of you are taking the time to listen either live or archived. There's going to be some uncharted waters in 2015, obviously. There's going to be some uncharted waters when we extend past the 20-team level in Major League Soccer. Many opinions have been expressed, positive and negative, and you all know where I stand with my opinions, but now is the time to not dwell on that. Now is the time to say I thank all of you for listening to the show. I thank all of you giving me an opportunity to discuss this game that I love and you all love so much, the American player, our American leagues, our national team, and hoping one day, that one day, we can be happy, proud, and ecstatic when our men's national team gets to a World Cup final for the first time ever, wins it, and holds that little golden statue and hug it as tightly as possible because history would have been made and it can be made. Because after everything is done, that moment hopefully will be here. World Cup champions. World Cup champions. That's the hope. And I'll be honest with you, I think right now we're in the right direction. Obviously, other parties need to play some ball a little bit, if you know what I mean. But no matter what, I always believe in the American player. I always believe that the American player has enough talent, has enough quality to be on these rosters in Europe. I always believe that the American player can do this, that the American player can go out there and work just as hard or even twice as hard as the regular European player or South American League player in these European rosters. The real questions is about, does the American player on an attacking level get enough respect? And we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show, because I have my own opinions about that topic that I'm going to discuss with you guys and how I believe that the American player is talented enough to play in Europe. But once again, I'm just a humble guy. I'm just a humble man trying to do what's right on my opinions about the game in this country and the opinions of the players that will play in our leagues and for our national team. And hopefully one day they will make that move to Europe if they do seem they're going to make that move. Because it's always refreshing and gratifying to do something like this. Now, granted, I wish I can do it every single day, Monday through Friday. Unfortunately, I don't have the budget to hire a full-time staff. But still, though, this is me, host, producer, board op, audio player, and all-around bartender. It's just me, myself, and I, my friends, me, myself, and I, talking about MLS, the NASL, the U.S. Pro League, U.S. Open Cup, anything American when it comes to the game of soccer or football as we know it. It is an honor and a privilege to be discussing this with all of you, including our friends up in Canada. If you do listen to this show, I thank you very much. I try to give everyone a lot of equal time to discuss this game. I try to give everyone the same respect and the same amount of time to go ahead and talk about why they love their club so much, why they spend the time doing it, how they're doing it, and why. It's fun. It really is. It's a great time. It's a wonderful time. And even though it was tough, it was very, very tough to see our national team get eliminated in the round of 16. Still, though, I have to say that it was a lot of fun seeing it happen, because you heard the rumor, no goals, no points. The USA is going to get eliminated, and look what happened. We get out of the group. Granted, it's not the way it was drawn up. Regardless, got out of the group. That's all that matters. And we did it. And we forced extra time against Belgium. It's a shame we couldn't force penalties. But you know what? I'm still proud of the boys. And I'm still proud of how they did the job. So let's go ahead. Let's talk some footy. Let's go ahead about our leagues, our clubs, our players. Thank you again for listening to this show. I always appreciate your time. Come on over and let's have some fun. I got a great show for you tonight. Of course, NASL segment, Ryan Martin from the Atlanta Silverbacks will be joining me talking about the Eric Winalda stepping down as head coach of the club. We're going to talk a little bit about the 1-1 draw against the San Jose Earthquakes with the New York Red Bulls in the Red Bulls Hour. We're going to talk about the DP signings of Graham Zuzzi and Matt Beisler for Sporting Kansas City. But first things first, joining me from Columbus, Ohio, from the Massive Report, SB Nation blog on the Columbus Crew, Matt Goshert. Matt, how are you and what's going on tonight?
Doing well, Daniel. How are you?
Doing very well, very well. First things first, Jaro Arrieta, how is he doing so far since the hamstring strain, and do you think he'll be back on the field shortly for the Crew?
You know, I've been talking to a couple of the guys. I don't think it's I haven't had a chance to talk to a couple of the guys who are out of practice the last couple of days to figure it out. But I do think he's coming along. We do hope to see him back with the crew as soon as is humanly possible.
All right. Well, that's great to hear. I was at Red Bull Arena, and I know you were probably over there too with the Nordic guys on the road. That did not look good when he, as you saw, he had to hold up his run, and it wasn't that good.
Yeah, it didn't look like it was comfortable for him at all. Hopefully, I've not heard too much at this point, but hopefully he'll be able to, you know, to bounce back from that.
Now, there's been some moves, obviously, by Greg. First things first about the club so far. You had a great start to the season, and then all of a sudden, it seems like there was a monkey wrench thrown into the works. Why has the Crew fallen down in the Eastern table, and what do they need to get back into a playoff position?
Well, I think you saw at the beginning of the season, you know, Berhalter was playing a different style, he was playing a different system, and a lot of the clubs that we faced early on weren't necessarily ready for that. I think as it continued to go down the line, I think you had a lot of people who were kind of adapting to that and figuring out what he was doing. And we didn't necessarily have the pieces, all the pieces that we needed in order to, in order to execute his style in the way that he wants and in the way that'll be, in the way that'll test those teams. I think one of the things, you know, you look at a guy like Dominic Oduro, great player, you know, obviously wish him well in Toronto, but just wasn't fitting in well with that system with Berhalter. And, you know, was taking up a lot of cap room. Hopefully that's a move, dealing him away, that's going to free up that space and going to allow Columbus to pull somebody in a striker role that's going to fit in with what he's trying to do and really, you know, really try to have that creative piece coming up, guys like Will Trapp and Federico Higuain.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like at times when you're missing some players either due to injury or apparently they're getting some rest, they're going to come off the bench, Higuain does not seem to be, I wouldn't say comfortable, but maybe he seems to be a bit frustrated out there because what was working last year, maybe the year before, it doesn't seem like it's working now.
Yeah, and I think that's you're going to see, especially with a player of that caliber, anybody who's in this sort of, in this sort of system that's going through a rebuild, there's going to be some frustration. I think from all accounts that I've heard, he's still happy here, and he's still, you know, he's still bought into what Berhalter's doing. He's bought into the system, and he's enjoying his time at the club. So hopefully that continues, and hopefully his frustration, with specific situations doesn't get the best of him.
Yeah, absolutely, and I definitely agree with you there. But overall, at this particular moment, how do you think Greg Berhalter has done so far in his first season being the Crew's head coach? Obviously, he came over from Sweden for the club team for Hammarby. Has he done a good job with what he's been able to work with, or do you think more can become better?
I think when this transfer window closes, we'll be able to really assess that. I think that he's kept the team, which wasn't, you know, with a lot of rubber or Zaha's parts. He's kept the team in the race for the playoffs. We're tied for the final playoff spot at this point. And going into this, with that sporting director title that he has as well, and with the ear of the guy writing the checks, Anthony Precourt, he needs to find some guys, and he needs to make some moves in order to get what his system, what he wants out of his system, to be able to implement that in a timely fashion. It's one of those things. the really good start that the club had, I think got a lot of people's hopes very, very high. And then this kind of just middling, you know, a lot of draws and some losses has really kind of, I don't think it's soured anyone in Greg Berhalter. I think that a lot of people are still confident that he's going to, you know, that he's going to be able to get the job done. He just needs more time. And I think that, but I think it's definitely, you know, with the high that everybody started on and then that kind of crash, it's been an interesting run so far. So we'll see exactly what happens after this transfer window closes and after if he's able to make some moves, if he's able to bring a couple of key components in, and you know, if Precourt's willing to write the checks that he wants for the guys he wants, we'll see what the second half of the season holds. I think that's going to be the real test.
Talking about your keeper, obviously Steve Clark has had a hell of a season so far. Wasn't used so much, I understand, from when he was with Seattle or for other teams before coming to Columbus. And you lost Grunenbaum, obviously. I think he went to Sporting Kansas City as backup. But still, what impresses you about Steve Clark that, you know, this is a diamond that's been unearthed for the first time ever?
Steve Clark's a guy that has kept us in a lot of games this year. He's responsible for a lot of the draws that we've had. You know, responsible for a lot of the points that we have on the table currently, and that's huge for us. He's definitely a guy that kind of reminds me of a Will Hesmer. He's a field general. He's really got he's really got his head in the game, and he's really somebody that's going to go out, motivate the guys, but also be there to make the huge saves when he needs to. He's had a few games that weren't his best showing, but I really think that without Steve Clark, you're looking at Columbus Crew the same way you're looking at the Montreal Impact this year. He's come up huge, and he's been he's just been a key for this team.
Absolutely. Talking about that transfer window, apparently there's been a player that's been released. I don't remember where I saw it. I'm trying to find it on Twitter, obviously, but apparently there's a player that's been asking for playing time, and he looks like he's been let go to find it somewhere else. Who was that player again?
Oh, it was a guy we had on loan, and you asked me that question, and I immediately forget what his name was because he wasn't getting any playing time. It was a guy that we had on loan. My thought process was just kind of brought in to kind of take a look at him. So not really a big loss there.
Right. Well, still, right now it seems like, at the moment, Columbus is in a decent position. Obviously, you want to get a little bit higher to get to a playoff spot. And you got a couple of teams, including Toronto, D.C., New England, that have a couple of games left to play before, of course, you have Columbus has 20 games like Sporting does and the Red Bulls and Houston. What does the Crew need to do to get into the top five of the Eastern Conference standings and cement it to get into the playoffs?
Well, it's going to sound cliche, but you got to win the games that you're expected to win. I mean, we have a pretty decent travel schedule. Most of our Western games at this point are already played. I don't think we have to go back to the West Coast for any reason this year. And then you've got two more games against Montreal. Montreal is struggling this year, and we have to be able to capitalize on those. Not that any game is easy necessarily, but Montreal definitely not playing up to form this year. And we've got them again a couple of times this year. We've got to make sure that we're taking advantage of these games against Eastern Conference opponents as well, and make sure that we're winning the games that especially against teams below us on the table. But really kind of figuring out how to put the pieces together. We've got to get somebody up there that can score goals. Jairo Arrieta is a great player, but I don't know necessarily if he's the answer or if he's the only answer as far as that goes. We have a glut of midfielders. We have a pretty decent defense, even with players going out on injury, things along those lines. We've got a decent defense. We just need to be able to produce more, and that's going to be the biggest key for Greg Berhalter is to see and to figure out exactly how to get this team to produce.
Well, let's talk about two positives here, obviously. It sounds like the crew is very, very happy about your or about their sold-out dollar night win over Montreal. Obviously, 14,700 brats, 14,621 cups of beer were consumed at
yes.
Crew Stadium. So how many did you have, and were you hammered?
I was hammered, but it was mostly off of the Canadian whiskey that I was drinking with the Montreal fans in the parking lot. It was you know, honestly, the dollar beer line, it's Bud Light, so I never get in the dollar beer line. I always just splurge for the better beer selection. We've got a lot of especially on the beer garden on the stage, a lot of, and in the Upper 90 Club, a lot of good local selections, and usually I'll drink something by Columbus Brewing Company or Elevator while I'm at the stadium, just because I don't like, you know, American water that the light is. So I did have a few when I was in the stadium, but the majority of my alcohol consumption for that match occurred at the tailgate.
There we go. That's it. If you don't want the light beer, you just ask for the Canadian whiskey. Then everything will be just fine.
Exactly.
Exactly. And the other thing is, obviously, Frankie Hayduck, as I like to call him, Surfer Boy, and we all know why he is.
Exactly.
I see this on the crew's Twitter page. Enter to win Frankie Hayduck number 2's custom crew 96 Camaro from Coughlin Cars. It really looks cool. I like what I see. Obviously, I would like to assume the scan to enter the little box there where you're scanning. Obviously, that's removable, I would have to assume, but still, it looks really
yeah.
cool. And it's a black Camaro with a yellow stripe with a crew shield on it, both on the hood of the car, on the doors. I would have to assume it's also on the top of the trunk of the car if it does have a trunk. But do they have one in yellow in reverse?
What's that?
Do they have a yellow one in reverse?
I think they did a couple of years ago, because they've done this promotion a couple of times now. I think the last one that they did was the colors inverted, if I remember correctly.
Okay. Very cool. Very, very cool. Very glad to hear it. Because that's a really cool car. I like seeing Frankie Hayduck doing these types of things, and it really just goes to show you what is why the crew do such a great job with the community in Columbus.
Yeah, that is definitely true, and it's definitely, you got to hand it to the sales staff. Last Saturday was actually the second full sellout, selling standing room only tickets that they've had this year. The first one nobody got to see, unfortunately, because it was cut short due to the lightning. But that match was also completely sold out, and they were selling standing room only tickets as well for that. So the sales staff has really done an amazing job as far as that goes.
Ah, that's awesome. Well, Matt, I appreciate the time as always. Thank you very much for coming on the show. I will definitely talk to you soon, and hopefully we'll meet up again when the crew comes back over here to play the Red Bulls.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Thank you for being on the show. I'll talk to you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Matt Goschert from the Massive Report on the Columbus Crew, talking about the crew here as they are still fighting, still going forward, still doing some good things here, and we'll see what will happen during the season. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, Matt Goschert from the Massive Report talking about the Columbus Crew of Major League Soccer. And now we're going to talk about a little something that I want to talk to you guys about when it comes to our players trying to make it in Europe. And of course, that is the two players that just signed their designated player contracts when it comes to Matt Beisler and Graham Zuzzi. Talking about them. Because here's the thing, and it has, this is probably the oldest conversation we're going to have talking about they should move to Europe. They have to go to Europe. It must be done. They got to make their careers for the national team better when they move to Europe. Let me say this right now. I want the national team to improve as well. And for that to happen, these clubs in Europe must find a way not just to bring them over, but for the coaches to give proper minutes to these players. Don't look at these players as a project. Don't. And I'm talking about the players, these clubs from Europe, because the truth is that while I understand that the players that they have on their rosters right now are top-notch, are much better, are supposed to be playing because they're going to fit the scheme and the system of these coaches, but, you know, I understand they also have national team aspirations as well. Every player, club side, should have the aspirations of playing for their national team. DeAndre Yedlin is the best example right now for the Seattle Sounders. DeAndre Yedlin is the future of the national team. Now, is he a permanent fixture of the national team? Probably yes. But then again, Jurgen Klinsmann might hold him back a bit because of Fabian Johnson. But it doesn't hurt to have a backup. Still, DeAndre Yedlin has aspirations to be on the national team. And we keep hearing Roma wants him to go there. Roma in Serie A is the rumor mill right now in the silly season that they want to bring over DeAndre Yedlin over there. Let me say this right now. And it has to be said right now. DeAndre Yedlin should only make this move if he is going to get the proper playing time that he deserves. We have seen way too many players who have either been attacking, creative, or those that are down the wings not getting a fair shot, and they have aspirations for their national team. And that is the only reason why I am saying this. It is the only reason why I am saying that we should temper the enthusiasm of a big club like Roma bringing him over, because if they're just going to bring him over to fill a roster spot, if they're just going to bring him over to just fill their missing roster spot and not give him the time, it makes no sense for him to be there, and it makes no sense for Jurgen Klinsmann to tell him to go there. Sometimes the alluring feeling or the pull to go to some of the best clubs in the world as a young American player just happen properly because they won't give you the time unless they really think you're going to outdo or unseat that particular player whose starting position is truly up for grabs. At this particular time, I think it's the smartest move for both Beisler and Zuzi to remain in Major League Soccer. Whether they're going to make the move to Europe, it's up to them. But the truth is they should not make a move like that blindly because they think they're going to the top club in that league or in that country, in that continent of UEFA. There has been consequences, stunt of growth, when it comes to the IQ of a player. And I hate to say this, Jozy Altidore is that player. Is it his fault? maybe it can be half the time. The other half of the time, it's the fault of the club. Just look what happened with Michael Bradley. He did the right thing. He played in the Eredivisie of the Netherlands, transferred to AS Roma, and then when the new coach came in, as the old one either left or got sacked, Bradley was the odd man out, either so-called not fitting into the system or because he's an American and the coach thinks Americans can't play this game. Because I'm telling you right now, I think that's the biggest farce from anybody when you're telling me Americans can't play. The same arguments I've had that Clint Dempsey is considered third or fourth on the depth chart when he was playing at Tottenham. Because he was just there to fill a roster spot. That's why Dempsey came back to Major League Soccer, and that's why Michael Bradley came back to Major League Soccer. Now, the only player that has never, ever played in Europe and had his entire career and was with the national team his entire career has been Eddie Pope, the former DC United MetroStars RSL defender, was a national team player. And you know what? But I will say this. We need to make sure that these clubs in Europe, whether it be the big four first division clubs, maybe French Ligue 1 in France, but I have to say this. I have to say that if these clubs truly want an American player, they're going to have to show some respect to us now. They have to start showing respect to the American player because we're no longer roster depth. Our players are starters. You want our guys? It's time to shell out the cash. It's time to shell out a good contract. It's time to say to these clubs, we are not backups. You want us because we can provide service and we can fill the back of the net. That's all I'm saying. Matt Beisler, Graham Zuzzi deserve their designated player contracts. They want to stay in MLS. And you know what? Here's the other argument about that. How many times have we heard Commissioner Don Garber continue to say that Major League Soccer wants to be the designation and the destination for players coming over and keeping our players within our league so it can become bigger and better? Well, Commissioner Garber, this is where you put your money and the league's money where your mouth is. And the only reason why I am saying this is very simple. We all know about the CBA that's coming up at the end of this season. Renegotiation. I understand you want to keep the single entity structure. I'm not saying to get rid of it all the way, but piece by piece, if you want to go slow, I will understand and accept that as a positive movement to making MLS into a better league, because guess what? The players need to be paid. Maybe it is time to allow the clubs to pay their players and just rework the rules of acquisition. Now, do I have an idea? Do I have a plan for this to happen? To be honest with you, everybody, I don't. I don't have a plan. Yet, I am not going to hammer that plan into your heads repeatedly because I think I'm right all the time. And that if you're not going to go my way, you're going to have to go back down the highway. Because while I do agree with certain things going on, one of those is obviously right now not the way to go, the way everything is currently structured. Right now, we're going to have to remain where we are, but we need to improve other areas. This is where I mean more needs to happen. When I keep saying more needs to happen, you know what that means? It simply means this, is that we cannot have an idea or a mechanism that works everywhere else all of a sudden just throw it in there. You cannot turn it on like your switch that turns on your lamps or the lights in your rooms, in your houses, or in your apartments. Everyone needs to be on board, but here's the problem right now that no one wants to see, that no one wants to understand, that no one is listening to anyone that has rationale. Here is the problem. We have an internal war between the leagues, depending on who has a partnership with whom. There is a war internally. They're not saying it, but it's really not that hard to decipher. The NASL is at war with both MLS and the USL Pro League. MLS has joined forces with USL Pro League, while the NASL has joined forces with the NPSL. And where does that leave all of us? Where does that leave all of us with this stupid, silly war against one another or the partnerships, certain leagues coming together fighting against each other? We have a war, ladies and gentlemen. And it's not looking good. So if you're demanding right now, if you're demanding a form of pro-rel to come up and all of a sudden say, we need to make this work, guess what? It's not going to work if all the professional leagues don't know their role. And I'm not the one to tell them, know your role. Because they should know it by now, but it's not my place. Believe me, I wish it was. I wish it was, because then everything would be copacetic. Everything would be working the way it should be. And at the same time, at the very same time, maybe, just maybe, we can accept the pro-rel debate. We can't. Because why? People are fighting against each other for the wrong reasons. And the only ones that need to settle this permanently is the soccer house in Chicago, which is the home of U.S. Soccer Federation. They need to settle this, and settle this now. Time for the North American Soccer League segment, the NASL segment. Some big news that happened about maybe a weekend or two ago, and that is, of course, Mr. Eric Winalda stepping down as head coach of the Atlanta Silverbacks. Joining me now, play-by-play announcer of the Silverbacks, is Mr. Ryan Martin. Ryan, thanks again for coming on the show, and how are you?
Good. You know, after getting Saturday's game out of the way and getting 3 points, I think maybe some of the storm clouds around Silverbacks Park are lifting a little bit in the eyes of a lot of fans. It was definitely, in the table and maybe for off the field reasons, a good night out.
Absolutely. Before we go to the negative, let's just talk about how this situation happened. Obviously, Eric Winalda said that he was going to manage this team from afar, possibly during Fox Soccer, or should I say Fox Sports Soccer games when it comes to the FA Cup, to the UEFA Champions League, that he might have to call in, phone in to try to make changes. Why, or shall I say first, did it work? Do you think it did work? Where did it work, and why?
You know, you and I had talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the fall season preview show, and of course, at that time, we had no inkling just yet that things were going to transpire as they did. I think the spring season, maybe it was kind of tough to tell if the experiment, if we will call it that, was a success for, or a failure. Obviously, the spring was not the best, not the worst, though, with 10 points from 9 games. You consider the roster turnover that they had, maybe only getting the 10 points from 9 games had as much to do with that as it had to do with the coaching situation. So with that said, I guess to give you a short and sweet answer, maybe the results are a bit incomplete to know if this was really a success or a failure per se. If we had had the full 27 games in the league to see how this would work out, and if we finished at the foot of the table then, of course, then we could say it was certainly not living up to some people's expectations. But as it is, I guess we're not going to know the answer to that.
Yeah, very true. Why were the reasons he decided to give it up? Was it basically he's a California boy and he couldn't stand it being so far away from his family? Was it because of the up-and-coming Fox soccer season with the Bundesliga coming up? Was it basically everything included?
The main reason really came down to his role at Fox being expanded. When Eric embarked upon this, obviously in the preseason going into the season, it was understood that his duties at Fox would mainly center around the midweek Champions League games, that he would be in studio to analyze those games, and thus he would, for the vast majority of the time, actually be able to be in town or with the team for the weekend games. As it turned out, kind of in midstream, Fox expanded his role to sending him on site to a lot of these games. Of course, remember at the end of the European season, we saw him at the FA Cup final, at the Champions League final. And I think we were going to see more of that for the upcoming season, and actually being on location, having to travel to Europe. So it got to a point where it wasn't just him traveling West Coast to East Coast. It was going to be him traveling West Coast to Europe to East Coast to West Coast, basically doubling his traveling obligations. So with that said, I think you could understand why suddenly the arrangement for, really, I think, all parties involved, him personally, because remember, he has a family as well. We can't forget that in the midst of all this. For all parties involved, it just really began to make less and less sense for him to continue being the on-field manager.
Yep, sounds like it. And I still understand he's still keeping his technical director title, which I think that's a good thing for him, because scouting players for the Silverbacks outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area, or in the southern end of the southeast end of the country, I think that's a pretty good thing for him to do, because, I mean, he still has enough talent and enough knowledge of finding good players and sending them down to Atlanta.
Absolutely, and I think every Silverbacks fan can be pleased that he's still remaining in the club in that capacity. You look at where the Silverbacks were in 2011 when they came back into league play after taking a couple of years off following the NASL-USL split. They were, I think a lot of people would tell you, they were really a ship without a rudder. And that spilled into the first half of 2012 as well. And then that was when the ownership made the decision to pursue him. Maybe it was a bit of a shot in the dark, but as it turned out, it wound up being a shot that hit its target. And so there's no question from the midpoint of 2012 on that he has served the club very well as a technical director. You look at some of the talent he's unearthed. And let's preface all this, too, by saying that the Silverbacks, and I think they would admit this as well, they are one of the money ballers, if you will, of the NASL. They're certainly not in a position to throw around the money that the Cosmos, that San Antonio, that Tampa Bay, that Minnesota will be able to do. And that's where having a guy like Eric in the fold is so vital, because he's done such a fantastic job of bringing in some of these guys who I think you could characterize them as diamonds in the rough, guys who have been well off the radar, and they have come in and performed admirably, whether it was someone like a Danny Barrera, who's fantastic for the Silverbacks last season, and of course earned a bigger money move to San Antonio this season. We see a guy like Hany Chavez, who at the beginning of the season it looked like he was going to be signed as cover, and yet here he is emerging as one of the top target strikers in the league, and indeed near the top of the scoring charts. So certainly very good that he's not stepping away from the club entirely, and you would have to think that with him still in that technical director's role, that pipeline of unheralded but very good talent at this level is going to continue.
Absolutely. Atlanta beats FC Edmonton 1-0. First game without Linalda as head coach, and that puts you at least tied for fourth with 3 points, ahead of Indy 11 and ahead of the Cosmos at the moment in the fall season standings. Who is running the Silverbacks at the moment, and is this an interim basis, or has this been given as a permanent position at the moment?
Well, just to clarify, the Edmonton game was Winalda's final game on the bench.
Oh,
but
I apologize.
No, it's okay. Only one game off, so no big deal. the new head coach was actually there in attendance, was on the bench taking everything in, and for older, more seasoned Silverbacks fans, very familiar face in Jason Smith, who had previous success with the Silverbacks back in their USL days. Of course, last season represented the Silverbacks' first trophy, winning the spring season, but we can't forget that Jason Smith had the Silverbacks 90 minutes away from winning the league in 2007 before losing in the final. So he is a guy who has some experience, not just in Atlanta, but generally has had success in the lower divisions here in the U.S. And I think what's going to be very integral here, a couple of things, really. Obviously, acclimating to the NASL, because as good as it is that he's had experience managing at this level, and again with the Silverbacks, I think we would all be very cognizant of the fact that this 2014 NASL is certainly a different creature than the USL of 2007-2008. You know, you do have some of the bigger money teams in the league. Maybe you do. I think the level of play is probably higher now, and he's certainly about to find that out this weekend against Minnesota. We kind of know what they're all about this year. It's going to be interesting to see how he gets on, but again, it is good that they have been able to bring in somebody with the experience that he has. They haven't gone completely off the beaten path and brought in a nobody, per se. So it is on a permanent basis, or at least through the end of the season. Maybe things will be reevaluated then. I'm not really sure, just to be honest, I'm not sure if his contract is only through the end of the season or if it's a two-year contract and into next season as well. But at the very least, this will be a good trial run for him in the fall season to get kind of reacclimated to the lay of the land in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you talk to any of the players about Winalda's stepping down as head coach? Did you ask them any questions? What was their feeling about this American soccer legend that he just decided to just end it the way he did?
You know, I actually didn't have a chance to really talk to any of the players because of course, with me living out of town and not getting up to Atlanta until Saturday, and then naturally with everybody going for their pregame preparations, you know, kind of stayed out of that. But in talking with Andy Smith at halftime, who, of course, for those of you who don't know, he is the Silverbacks president and general manager, I think you could tell that there was a certain, maybe sadness is too strong of a word, but a certain dismay, shall we say, that Wijnaldum wasn't able to carry on as the full-time manager. You know, everybody wanted this to work from the top down, obviously, as much as maybe other people in other corners of the U.S. soccer scene kind of had to maybe poke some fun at it, I guess is the best way to put it, considering how unorthodox of an arrangement it was. But I think everybody wanted it to work. The fact of the matter is, and I know a lot of people maybe have their own perceptions of Eric Wijnaldum, seeing him on TV, be a bit outspoken and brazen, but this is a guy who really does care about this club. And I think that was pretty clear in his immediate post-game comments. You know, everybody, I think, was pulling for him, wanting him to be able to see this through. And I think, granted, admittedly, I wasn't able to talk with any of the players about this, but I think given the feeling from those in the club hierarchy wishing that this had worked out, I think a lot of that can be passed down to the players, too. I think that feeling was probably from top to bottom present in the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that Wijnaldum, once again, the magic touch in the Open Cup gave the Silverbacks a hell of a ride, and almost forcing it into extra time, possibly, against the Chicago Fire at Silverbacks Park. Did you feel that there was another upset special coming?
You know, it was another one of those games. And I feel like sometimes this doesn't matter who the competition is when it comes to the Silverbacks this season, whether it's NASL, whether it's obviously the Cup run. There's another one of those games in which you just felt like the Silverbacks, for a large part of the game, actually were the better team. For it to all kind of go pear-shaped, as they would say in those final 10 minutes, it was certainly disappointing because it, for a large part of that game, it felt very, very winnable. But yeah, at the very least, I think everybody could take a lot of pride and a lot of joy from the Cup run that they went on, even if it wound up ending in a fashion that certainly was a bit bittersweet.
Absolutely. It really, really was. So, you know, I was trying to call you up after that loss, and I was trying to give you some sympathy, but no, you were a jinx that night, staying at home. And when he says he lives outside of Atlanta, he really lives outside of Atlanta.
Right,
out of the state, actually.
So.
Yes, you are. So technically you'd be late, but really early. No.
But see, Eric wasn't the only one having to travel in for games, so I can completely sympathize. Not even sympathize, empathize.
I know. No. But seriously, though, Ryan, thank you very much for calling up. Thanks for giving us the information about the whole situation. How confident do you feel about the Silverbacks in this fall season? Do you think that they'll be one of the two wild cards that finishes up this fall season?
Well, I still have to go back to something we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that I thought that with some pieces of the puzzle literally and figuratively coming together, that the Silverbacks could make a run at fourth. At the very least, top four in the fall, whether that's enough to bridge the gap in the overall table, maybe another question. But we know they can score goals with anybody in the league. It's just a matter of keeping them out. And I think there is some promise. You look at this past game against Edmonton, and I know a lot of people would say, well, it was Edmonton. They're not exactly one of the high flyers in the league. But given some of the defensive problems the Silverbacks have had, you would almost favor anybody to score against them. But maybe we're seeing some progress there in the back end, especially not least of which was Joe Nasko returning on loan from Colorado. That's immediately going to make a big difference, as we saw against Edmonton, because he came up with a couple of very clutch saves in that one. I still think they can push for fourth. And we look at the overall table now, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Tampa – I don't have it right in front of me, but I think Tampa Bay may be in fourth on 16 points overall.
Mm-hmm.
And the Silverbacks are on 13. And I think after that top three that we've seen the overall table with Minnesota, Cosmos, and San Antonio, I think it's wide open for fourth. And given some of the problems the Silverbacks have had, to be only 3 points off of fourth and what may potentially be that wild card, one of the two wild card spots, I don't think we could really ask for much more now. The potential is definitely there. It's all going to come back down to, not to belabor the point, but it's all going to come back down to actually keeping the goals out. And obviously Minnesota this weekend will be a different nut to crack as compared to Edmonton. If they can have a good defensive performance against Minnesota, I think we'll definitely have to feel like there's some promise for sneaking into the top four.
All right. Well, listen, thank you so much, Ryan, again for joining me. Good luck the rest of the way with the Silverbacks. We'll see what happens at the end of this fall season. And I will talk to you later, sir.
All right. Talk to you soon.
And that's Ryan Martin, play-by-play voice for the Atlanta Silverbacks online, NESL.com, NESL.com for all your second division information involving all those clubs in the North American Soccer League. And now we go ahead, we talk about the New York Red Bulls. A 1-1 draw, once again, and against a team that is basically terrible in the West, but they always find a way to annoy the Red Bulls because either their chances were taken well and John Bush makes an excellent save, or it's just there's an aura around the Earthquakes whenever the Red Bulls play them in games where they should be able to beat them. Did not happen. But something else strange happened in this game. Something interesting that maybe it's best if I just go ahead and play the audio for you is Mike Petke talking about this match and how he's not happy with how it was officiated, and we'll get to my opinion about that after the audio. Here is head coach of the New York Red Bulls, Mike Petke.
Red Bulls head coach Mike Petke. We'll open it to questions. First one.
Mike, after looked like a very good start to the game, and obviously Steven Lenhardt is usually one of those guys that puts one in late. How tough is this one for you after such a great start to the match?
Yeah, very tough. Extremely tough. Not really much more I can say.
Brian?
The foul count was 21-7.
The what?
The foul count was 21-7 against you guys.
I know you said you went over to Rivera to say something.
No, I went over to separate, get my player out of there, okay? But, I mean, all you could do is laugh. All you could do is laugh. We have players on our team who, a player who's been apparently targeted, I've been told by the fourth official, he didn't play tonight, by the way, I've been told by the fourth official in two previous games, that they've been told about this player to keep an eye on. He's been suspended twice. 21-7 fouls against us. It's laughable. I just sit back and laugh. I told the fourth official, I'm not even yelling at you. I'm just going to laugh. It's funny. It's become that. No reason why we tied this game, but it's just unenjoyable to sit there and watch stuff like that.
You said it didn't affect the game. How did it affect you trying to get some momentum with 21 fouls?
Well, yeah. I mean, what I said was I'm not blaming us not getting a win on that, and I won't blame it. You know, perhaps I could, but I won't. But at the end of the day, you're absolutely right. Momentum. You know, how many times tonight did a player of ours certainly get fouled with no call, only to 5-6 seconds later in their transition, him call foul for them, and it turns into a scoring opportunity. Happened numerous times tonight. And most of the times that I'm talking about, we did foul at them. But there was blatantly, clearly a foul on us previous. By not calling that, then you call that, it gives them a goal scoring opportunity. It's laughable.
Brian and Dave. Obviously, you haven't had much time in there, but Dave, how is Tim?
I haven't seen him yet.
You haven't seen him yet, so you have no idea where he is.
He got hit in the head, but I haven't, or in the eye, but I haven't seen him yet.
And does that, I guess, kind of speak to your earlier point? Tell him what on him.
Again, I'll use the word laughable. And notice I have not said, I have not used the word starts with an R or O. I have not used that. Okay? I just said there were things tonight that were laughable.
Dave,
sticking to the lack of calls, it seemed like you were very focused on the sideline, watching the battle between Duvall and Salinas. Do you think that it's possible that, considering you're putting out so many rookies, they're not getting the calls that normally...
I honestly can't answer these questions because I just don't know. You know, I mean, there could be a thousand possibilities. All I know is that it's become, not just with me, not with my team, talking to other coaches, watching other MLS games, it's become a serious problem. To me, it's always in this league been a problem. It's become a serious problem. But at the end of the day, I'm sure it'll continue.
And not just to stick with the fouls, but to also talk about the missed opportunities by your team early on. I mean, how much does that affect you as well?
Yeah, I mean, we had clear opportunities, clear. Not as half chances, not debatable opportunities. We had clear cut chances, and, you know, they just didn't go in. It was one of those things. Last year, they go in. Last year, we don't lose this game. This year, we're losing these games or tying these games.
Yeah.
Something positive, obviously, going on the Salinas. He was frustrated tonight by both Oyongo and Duvall. And while they are rookies, how proud are you of them for handling a guy like Salinas who's been, he looked frustrated all night, and he took a booking when he fouled Duvall?
Yeah, I mean, these kids have energy. He's done a good job so far. That's all I want to say because still young. We're not ready to call them the Nexus or proclaim them to be bona fide starters or all-stars. They're young kids who have done well with their opportunity, and if they keep continuing to do that, it's positive for us.
Yeah, Dan.
Mike, it's been a three-game week, and I know there was some talk about fatigue on Wednesday, but you only made one sub tonight. Can you speak? And I know a lot of fans are wondering why only one? Why not get some fresh legs out there?
Well, because the game didn't call for a sub with some of with the players that we had in the bench tonight. Okay, I had somebody ready to come on after Peggy, and then they scored a tying goal, and you know, that kind of goes out the window. You know, Andre Akpan, I would love to bring on a situation like this. I mean, we have a leading scorer up top that scored again tonight and had countless opportunities. Then I have Thierry Henry up top who can make a difference at any second. It's tough, I know. I've gotten these young guys in the back line, and I'm hopefully going to find the right opportunities to get other guys in. But at the end of the day, it's not that I don't want to make a sub. It's that I don't feel... I understand you or the fans, you know, might have their opinion and I respect it. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't feel like it's going to make an impact in the way the game's going, I'm just not going to make it so.
Just take one more here.
Did you feel up until the goal that you guys had made improvements defensively up until that point? The second part of that is you and several other people talked about wanting to see fight, and so forth. Are you afraid when guys are getting carded and getting these fouls and they look at the stat sheet and they say, well, you tell them you show fight and grit and I got a guy booked. Are you afraid that that's going to be hard to get them to walk that line?
No, I don't think players are reading into that. I don't think because Tim said more grit than me saying, I think I said something along the lines of getting back to, you know, the way we played last year as far as fighting and all this. I don't think guys look at that and came today saying, I'm going to foul more or I'm going to, you know, hurt somebody. So I don't think that's an issue. But there's something askew, I guess you could say, compared to last year. Last year we were a good, solid team that shut games down when we were up, that worked to the very end. And it's a little bit different this year. And we're going to try to pinpoint it. Why? Perhaps perhaps we're a year older, perhaps, I don't know, perhaps making the conscious decision not to change the roster because of the success we had last year. You know, maybe we should have made a couple more changes. I don't, you know, there's a lot of things we could say we should have. It's about finding, you know, what's going on and trying to fix it like we try to do every day.
And that is Mike Pecky. Mike Pecky talking about this game. And, you know, it really bothers me when you have a referee that's being told to please watch this player because he is fouling a lot, or he's, you know, he's not being officiated properly because he's performing some bad fouls, and, you know, whatever Armando gets in a booking or in a suspension, you know, it's well deserved because he's not controlling his actions properly when he's fouling players. He's causing injuries. And I completely understand why. I completely understand why. But if I can ask this question, and I think it's a proper question because, to be honest, never saw Armando on the field, and I never saw Armando on the bench or coming off the bench in this game. If the league is intentionally targeting Armando, then shouldn't the referee not give so many fouls to Red Bull players? I saw on the foul count 6 against Bradley Wright Phillips. I mean, when you see Thierry Henry collect the ball, and then you see basically Jason Hernandez slide tackling the ball and going through Henry, and that doesn't get called, what's the problem? Are we starting to say now by the league that if Armando is not on the field, that every foul should go against the Red Bulls? I mean, the fourth official informs Mike his player Armando is being targeted because of all the stupid challenges he's creating. I mean, Mike doesn't even use Armando in this game, yet the Red Bulls are still targeted. Shouldn't that be, you know, let go? Shouldn't it be let go if you're getting the starting 11 and the bench players? And even if he is on the bench, but he doesn't sub into the match, which Mike only used one sub, and that was Lou Yandula, where in the world should we see this team being targeted for fouls? Because everyone in the stadium saw what was going on. Now, granted, the Red Bulls had plenty of chances to put the game away, and they didn't. The Red Bulls had tons of opportunity to put this game away, and they did not. So that is their fault all the way. But the question is this. The question I have is, why all these fouls to disrupt the rhythm for the Red Bulls? Why? To know from pro, I'd like to know from the league office, I'd like to know what's going on. Because at this moment in time, I find it ridiculous and I find it pathetic that the New York Red Bulls got targeted intentionally, and they coughed up 2 points once again, their own fault. Once again, own doing by not converting their chances. That is a side issue. But tell me why they're being targeted, and the foul count against was 21-7 on the Red Bulls. How is that possible? You know, I'd like to know why all of a sudden this problem happened. And if you don't know, then it's a shame, because it only proves that the league is inept with their referees. The only referee, once again, is Mark Geiger, who knows how to officiate properly. Mark Geiger is the only person to officiate a match properly, because he is the one that got to the World Cup, not all of them. I am disappointed. I am angry. I am just flabbergasted on how the officiating was done by this referee. And if you want to talk about, well, what about the missed chances the Red Bulls had? They had missed their chances. They missed their chances. They should have destroyed the Quakes. They should have at least had a 2-3 goal win. Did not happen. I just get so upset. I just get so upset and so angry when there's an intentional targeting of this team by the league. Why? How? I don't know. But if these are the reasons why Red Bull fans are very suspicious about MLS, did it once again. You did it once again. You have given these people an opportunity to say, we don't trust you. Because right now, this is a situation where they're going to look at every little thing you do, Major League Soccer. Red Bull fans will take a look and see what you've been doing, what you are doing, why this is happening, why that's happening. And they're going to claim once again that you don't like this team. And that's why I get mad, and that's why I get angry when these little so-called things are a waste of time. It's really simple, MLS, and to the pro division for the referees. You tell your officials to talk to each other, since you have the walkie-talkies and the microphones. If you see something, you tell the ref so he can give the player the booking or the sending off that they deserved. And then you wouldn't have to retroact on the videos, and you wouldn't have to tell these officials to start targeting Armando because of these types of fouls. It's not that hard. Maybe if your refs can do their jobs properly, we wouldn't have to worry about this. That's all I can really say about it. That's all you can say. Let's get back to the Knights. Let's go to Luis Robles. Obviously had a great night till Steven Lenhart leveled it up late in the 85th minute. Here's his opinion.
All right, let's go.
was that a good enough performance to win tonight from New York?
No. How many games have we played? 20?
Yeah, I think so.
20 games? I think from our standpoint, we have to be looking to be improving all the time. And it just seems like the goals we've conceded in the last 5-6 games is they just seem to be on replay. Not responsive. Reacting too slow. And we've got 14 games left and we have to have the mindset of fixing our mistakes. If we don't fix our mistakes, then we can kiss the playoffs goodbye.
Is there a commonality in these goals or are they all kind of different?
I think the only common variable in all of them is that we're reacting too slow to play. Instead of anticipating where the ball is going and closing off those lanes where the forward's going to go, we're letting them take space. We're letting them play too easily in and around the box. Felt like in the first half we did a good job of limiting their crosses, and even some of their crosses that were dangerous, our defenders were able to get back and make great plays. But, it takes a certain sort of mental toughness to do that for 90 minutes, and right now, looking at the last 4 or 5 games, that's the question. Our mental toughness.
He said not quick enough to close down space. How much of that do you think is because of playing 3 games in such a short period?
Yeah, I mean, sure, that definitely can come into play. I think you look at that schedule, and that's difficult. We're playing 90 minutes, and we didn't make too many changes to our lineup, so those guys are going to be tired. So that's expected. Mistakes are going to happen. But what I'm talking about is the mental toughness. And right now, starting for myself and all the way up to the top, we have to question if we have that. And if we don't have that, how are we going to get that?
Were there any positives from tonight in terms of the shape of the back line? Some of the compactness seemed at times better than it was certainly on Wednesday.
Well, Wednesday we played Connor Casey, and gosh, he's a beast in the air. And the one thing that he was able to do is flick balls on and allow his team to get second balls, constant second balls that will come at us. We did a good job of not only winning the first ball today, but winning the second ball. So it limited just how much of an impact those forwards can have. And Wondolowski and Leonard and even Gordon at the end, those guys are very difficult to play in the air. And I felt like our defenders did a good job.
There was a moment before the goal was scored, you seemed to make a save that looked kind of difficult. Like maybe around the 80th minute, it seemed like you had to like really stretch or go to your left before it went in. You made a good save there. Is that how fast San Jose can put one past you?
I don't remember that. We talk about the deflection?
Probably the deflection.
Okay. Yeah. You get this fact. You're playing against Wondolowski. He was in the World Cup. He's going to be able to turn it on. And then Steven Leonard, everyone else for the last couple of years, that guy is a bully up front. And these guys, a couple years ago, I'm pretty sure had what, both of them was 20 goals, or Alan Gore. I mean, we're playing high power offense, and we prepped for that. We knew their tendencies and how they're dangerous. And in the end, you could almost feel like maybe they're going to nick one. And it just goes back to being mentally tough.
Forgive me.
Finishing
for
games.
Sorry. Forgive me if it's already
dang
been
it,
covered.
Dave.
It's always me. Yeah. Forgive me if it's already been covered, but there's a lot of talk about fatigue leading up to the game. Do you think there's some truth to it, or is it more of an excuse at this point?
I think you're going to have to ask those guys. You can check the the range, and I covered in 3 games. It's probably not that far. I did come off my line once. Oh, there was a sprint there, but that's not my expertise. That's something that you gotta ask the guys.
I'll just ask Franco.
Okay.
All right. What line?
And that is Luis Robles. But obviously, just got to say that for Robles, great match again. He's been doing some great things so far with the Red Bulls. I mean, you're leading in saves. And if you really think about it, if you're leading in saves, shouldn't you be also leading in wins? And unfortunately, the team hasn't been doing that. It's been a tough year so far. It's been a very, very tough year so far for the club, and all I can say is they're just going to have to try and play a much better defensive game if they're going to move up to the top and challenge for the Eastern Conference again. Because if they can do that, then everything will be much better. Everything will be going according to plan. You know, at the moment, it just doesn't seem like certain things are gelling at the moment. But once again, you got some good young players doing well. And once again, all you can ask for is that they just continue to plug away and try to get that a winning streak or unbeaten streak going. That's all you can really ask for. Talking about young players, once again, Chris Duval, Ambrose Oyongo are doing great things on the wings, on the back line at fullback. Here's Chris Duval so far, right now.
So obviously it's a bit of a tough result, obviously, but you and Oyongo had to mark Salinas tonight. How tough was he, and how did you feel about your performance against him so far?
I mean, he's a great player. I mean, like a lot of the guys in this league, they're veterans and they're great players. They're tough to play against, but you know, as long as we focus on our defensive duty and you know concentrate on that, you know, it's our job. We have to handle it, and you know, I think we did an okay job, but of course we didn't get the shutout, so it wasn't good enough.
When you look at the 85 minutes, though, you guys did defend well. Is there an improvement do you see from some of the struggles that you've had defensively?
I mean, we're constantly working to try to figure things out and, you know, work on our partnerships with the people next to us. So, you know, it'll just continue to get better. But, I mean, of course, we're still 5 minutes away from a shutout, so it needs more improvement.
Lenhardt seemed like he was trying to break through this whole game. What did you see break down defensively when he did get that goal in the 85th minute?
And we worked on and we talked about not letting them get crosses in, because that's what they're looking for. So I think if we could have denied the cross and, of course, get more pressure on him once he got the ball, we could have stopped that. But, I mean, you know, not getting a shutout is – there's no excuses for it. So, I mean, we have to work on that.
Did you sense their frustration when you were just – stopping them all game long before that goal came in?
I mean, I wouldn't say frustration. You know, we're just, you know, we have to deal with everything. You can't have a perfect game. They're, of course, going to get opportunities, but, you know, we dealt with what came to us, and unfortunately we weren't able to get the shot today.
You guys played 3 games in 8 days, and there was talk before the game after playing about fatigue. Did you feel that before the game? Is there fatigue at this point in the season?
I mean, it's definitely tough to play 3 games in 7 days, but, I mean, that's why we have, you know, our coaching and our staff here to help us recover. And, I mean, by the time the game comes around, we need to be ready. So, you know, if we prepare correctly, then there shouldn't be a problem.
Chris Duval talking about marking Shea Salinas. Let me tell you something. Shea Salinas did not look happy to be facing either Ambrose Oyongo or Chris Duval. First half, Shea Salinas was on the right side of the field, of course, on Oyongo's left. And Oyongo just basically marked him well, stole the ball, picked it off, anything and everything. He looked solid down the left side. And there was a point where you thought that Salinas was going to cut in and attack the net. And then all of a sudden, there's Oyongo making some great, great plays, looking strong. You know, he made some great tackles, never took down Salinas, and he just looked great, absolutely. And probably at halftime, Mark Watson, the head coach of the Quakes, said to himself, I'm going to have to put him on the other side of the field. So he puts him on the left side, right side for Chris Duval, and Duval just doing the same thing like Oyongo was doing, frustrating him out of nowhere, preventing him from crossing the ball, bringing up the ball, marking Salinas very well. And you just have to say that for Duvall and Oyongo, they have done the job. Now, obviously, Roy Miller is probably going to come back and retake his starting position as left back. Now, once again, Oyongo proving right now that he can do the job. Now, depending on what happens with Roy Miller at the end of the year, do they re-sign him? Do they keep him? We'll see what happens. But obviously, Ambrose Oyongo is looking fantastic, defending, bringing the ball up, crossing the ball. He's looking absolutely fantastic. So all I can say is that it's been absolutely fantastic seeing these kids getting an opportunity and seeing these kids going out there and doing some damage. Because you're looking for the future of these positions for the club moving forward. Great stuff seeing what's going on here. It's just been a wonderful, wonderful thing to see. And you know what? More power to them. Continued success for these two kids. They look like they're going to be the future for this club. But, of course, there is some problems in midfield. And once again, it's Eric Alexander. Because apparently he's the one that allowed Leonard to get that goal to tie the game up at one apiece. And as of right now, he is definitely at the ire of the fans. But here's Eric Alexander talking about the game and what happened.
Well enough to win this game tonight?
No, definitely not. There's a lot of things we can start doing better. And, you know, it's falling on the players' shoulders and we're just not getting the job done.
You guys did get a lot of chances, and Bradley had some great opportunities, but was this the kind of a game where you just knew one goal might not be enough?
You know, we always want to score as many as we can and try to keep a shutout, but, you know, tonight, you know, we did have a couple of chances, and, you know, sometimes you do get that feeling if you don't get the second one, it might bite you in the butt a little bit, and it did, so, you know, I think we're all a little bit disappointed.
Anything you take from that Lenhart goal, what do you believe broke down?
I had a terrible header for clearance, and, I don't know if somebody bothered across the box, and it was just a scramble, and they got a touch and scored.
You said the team can do a lot of things better. What are some of the things they can improve on at this point in the season?
At this point in the season, you know, I don't can't remember the last time that we had a clean sheet. So defending as a group, and then, you know, also giving up a lot of early goals. I know tonight wasn't one of them, but just starting off the game strong and just playing as a unit.
You guys did that for 85 minutes today, so is that small positive takeaway. The other defender took a tough 85 and then obviously gave up
the lead. Yeah, I mean, I think the defenders did a great job tonight, and you know, obviously my misclearance, I think, was a big part of that last goal. And I think they did a great job, and Luis always does a great job, so I think we're all a little disappointed how it ended.
They're obviously a very physical team, and we saw that today. I mean, were you surprised by the way the official kind of let things go?
I don't really have a comment on the officials. But, you know, he did a pretty fair job. You know, I know we were upset of a couple of calls or no calls there at the end, but I couldn't really see what happened, so I have no judgment.
And that is Eric Alexander. Of course, he doesn't want to be a Mr. Negative about it, but you know what? We can, because we can say it. But other than that, it's a really, really tough moment to talk about when you think, well, you definitely know one goal is not enough. You definitely know one goal is not enough, and you need to get that second. You need to get that second, and it just does not come to fruition. And that second goal is coming you think it's coming, and then all of a sudden that goal that gets it all tied up, knocks you down. And then you're expecting to get that second one to retake the lead late, and it didn't come. From a distance, it looked like Lou Dula was kicked in the face in the penalty area, and there was no call. And you look at the replay. At first glance, it looked like I thought he got hit in the face with the leg. I thought it was another Rockettes moment than what happened to Clint Dempsey, but there was no contact on the second look of the replay just to make sure. And it showed that there was no contact. And even though he did go down, still was a high leg. It was in the area. Gutsy call, but it was a right call. And Louis Andula not happy about it as he was arguing with the officiating crew, saying, he kicked me in the face. You got to call that. But still, though, it's a situation where it looked really tough to see. It really looked tough to get a hold of this. Of the situation, but still, you just have to say that Lou Dula was not fouled in the area. The leg was high, face high, but it did not strike him in the face. So, right call, and it probably would have. We'll see what might have happened if he did call it, but situation that he did not call it. So. There you have it, and there's the situation. But the Red Bulls get their only goal of the match on a penalty converted, who's 3-for-3, Mr. Bradley Wright Phillips, the real BWP, as he gets number 17 on the season. 4 goals away from earning number 20 on the season. 4 goals away. Wait, 4 goals away. I'm sorry. 3 goals away. Because if it's 4 goals away, it's number 21. But 3 goals away. 3 goals away from earning number 20. Obviously, the match coming up this Saturday is a friendly. So we're going to have to wait and see what's going to happen. Next Wednesday when the club is on the road in Salt Lake City. Bradley Wright Phillips on the match, even though he feels he could have done better, but still, he's 3 goals away from getting number 20.
How tough is this one to swallow when you've been leading all match long?
It's a difficult one today. Personally, I should have scored more. So I'm not in the best mood. But I don't know. It is what it is.
What does the team have to do to get results more consistently? Because obviously, they haven't been strung together all that often.
Yeah, not concede the obvious thing. You know, got to work harder as a team to not concede silly goals. It's all our own doing.
Number 17 on the season, creeping up to possibly number 20. I know right now personal accomplishments are not in favor, but how do you feel with your own play right now? Do you feel you've been improving?
It's up and down. One week I'm happy, and another week I'm not, you know. Obviously, you know, from the outside, it looks like I'm doing well because I'm getting goals, but, you know, I need more consistency.
When did you find out that you made the All-Star team?
Just before the game.
Yeah. Obviously, there's no All-Star game when it comes to football in England, and this will be the first time you're going to get involved in something like this. Intrigued or happy to go?
I'm flattered, you know. I think it's a good accomplishment, you know, first season. But right now, I think it's, 2 weeks away?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so me personally, I'm just thinking of the next league match, you know. I think that's Salt Lake.
How heavy were the legs before today? Obviously, it's the third game in 8 days.
Yeah, it was tiring, you know, but that's what we get paid to do. And you could have picked anyone out of the crowd that would have played 3 games in a week, so it's not really a factor. Obviously, it gets harder on the third game, but it's not really a factor. You just got to get more shutouts.
Did you have any issues with the rather large disparity between fouls called with 2 teams?
Yeah, but that's, I don't want to get into rest and so on. You know, I don't want to get into that.
And that is Bradley Wright Phillips, three away from 20. And, if you, to be honest, 10 away from Lassiter Wando territory. Let's see what's going to happen. Let's see what's going to happen here. Because it should be interesting. And you know what? I cannot wait to see it happen. I cannot wait to see it happen because I think he can do it. I really think he can do it. I think that Bradley Wright Phillips has plenty of time to knock off the 20 mark. And I think he has enough time, especially with one game remaining against Houston. Now, let's not forget, he has scored already 5 goals against the Dynamo. I'm telling you right now, I think Bradley Wright Phillips is going to be the one to truly challenge that record. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens when we get to that position. But once again, it's a 1-1 draw that ends that night. The 1-1 draw that says Red Bulls are in trouble. It's not the question of scoring, it's the question of defending. I think that is the big question right there and then. I think that is the big question right now. It's defending. It's not about scoring goals because they can score. The real problem right now is their defense. And it's not Robles' fault. He's doing a great job. That back line right now is just becoming a little bit of a problem. And until that back line gets fixed, once it gets fixed, I think the back line will be a lot better. I think they will perform much better. And hopefully after this friendly and after the All-Star game, everything will be just fine. Congratulations, though, to Bradley Wright Phillips and to Tim Cahill being added on to the roster for the All-Star game against Bayern Munich over at Geltwen Field. Excuse me, Providence Park. Definitely. Definitely. Definitely, it's a great honor to have both Bradley Wright Phillips and Tim Cahill joining Thierry Henry for this All-Star game in Portland. I think the real question is, will real grass come into play? We don't know. But I'll say this. No matter how many times I like to talk about it or not talk about it, and I have to say it, I think it's time to end the All-Star game. I think I just think it doesn't have any more meaning. I think it's a blip on the schedule that continues to be a hindrance, an interference of the season. And at the same time, it interferes because you have the start of the CONCACAF Champions League on that same week. So if you pull and say, well, there's no history between the if there's no history in respect for the CONCACAF Champions League, well, that's the reason why. That's the reason why, because MLS continues to have this All-Star game in the middle of the first week of the CONCACAF Champions League. I don't know, and I don't understand why they keep on interfering with international matches for their clubs that actually mean something. This is the situation, once again, that they need to understand. If we're going to have these games like what CONCACAF does that means something, CONCACAF must put their foot down and contact the league and say, listen, this is our week. This is our week. This is what we have planned. You do not have your All-Star game on this day. You don't do it. You don't use it. You get out of it, and that's the end of it. CONCACAF must put their foot down and contact the league office and tell MLS, no All-Star game for you during our club tournament. And that, my friends, is what should happen. Well, a big, big weekend day is coming. It's this Saturday, July the 26th. The defending FA Cup champions, Arsenal, will be playing the New York Red Bulls in a friendly at Red Bull Arena. And if you don't have your tickets, you can watch it live on ESPN2 at 5 o'clock Eastern. I am looking forward to seeing this club making their first appearance in 25 years to the States for a preseason tournament. I am curious to see this club play because this is the club that created a monster that can score goals and is probably one of the greatest strikers in the world, and that is Thierry Henry. This is the club where Thierry Henry has always had his heart set on, his heart and his mind. Not to say he doesn't like being in New York, because you know he does. But the truth of the matter is this. But the truth is that this is the respect that he deserves. Thierry Henry, in my opinion, deserves whatever accolade he gets. And you know what? I'm very happy to know truly coming over. I am, because while we've seen Manchester United a couple of times, some have seen Man City and Chelsea, Liverpool, we've never seen Arsenal come over here. And now they're coming. They've done pretty well in the transfer market, signing new players since this World Cup has been over and done with. We're going to see Mesut Ozil, Alexis Sanchez, Ospina. We're going to see Theo Walcott. We're going to see a lot of players that play for their club, that play for their national team during this World Cup. And it should be interesting to see how they perform. It really should be interesting to see . But the truth is this. The truth is that we're going to see a man who finally got a trophy in that FA Cup title, in that FA Cup final. And I think we're finally going to see a man that's going to enjoy himself this season to try and win the Premier League title. Is my money on Arsenal to lunch with you? Probably not. Because I don't have a dog in that fight right now. I want it to play out, and let's see what's going to happen. But we will see what's going to happen. We're going to see what's going to happen when the boys face the defending FA Cup champions. It will be exciting. I truly believe it's going to be exciting. I know there's a lot of people that support Arsenal in the New York City area. My good friend, Dr. David Kilpatrick from Mercy College, he's a big Arsenal supporter. Some of the boys from the Viper's Nest crew, time Arsenal fans, the Viper himself, Miguel Nunez, the Kremkow brothers, the twins, they are going to be really, really big boys having some fun with this. Because for me, like I've said, you know, I don't have a dog in the Premier League fight. I just like to sit back and watch. I just like to sit back and watch. Because here's the thing. I used to be a Premier League fan. I used to be a Manchester United supporter. And while I still have the shirt, and I still kind of, you know, go Man United, go Man United. Not really. The truth of the matter is Euro snobbery put me off. Euro snobbery really put me off. And I just gave up on it because I said to myself, what's the point? What's the point of supporting a league in Europe, or at least a club in Europe, if you're going to get bombarded by schmucks that will continue to say our league is crap, it's not worth the time? I admit that there are times I don't like what most, but still, though, I just find it pathetic and stupid that people that will listen to idiots, there was a certain host of that World Soccer show, or what was it, World Soccer Weekly, not World Soccer Talk, the website, World Soccer Weekly or World Soccer Daily, that's it, who used to host the Fox Football Throw-Up. He's not doing anything anymore because apparently Liverpool supporters continued to harass him because of his crap. I choose not to say his name because it's not worth mentioning his name. You probably will know who I'm talking about when you want to look up World Soccer Daily or World Soccer Weekly on the Wikipedia to find out who the original host was. Because, you know, that man, sadly, destroyed something that shouldn't have been destroyed in the first place. That man destroyed what being a true supporter of the game is all about. That man did not know what to do. All he did was basically be a bandwagoner for a certain club. And all I can say is that I don't care about him anymore. But unfortunately, the damage was done. Because how many times you have to talk to a Euro snob? And how many times does this guy have to tell you how crap your league is? Even though you watched the Premier League and the other European leagues, but you get the best of both worlds here, don't you? You watch the Premier League early morning up till 2:30 and DVR other league games as well. And then you can go to your MLS league game, your NASL league game, your USL game, and you can support your side. That's what I did. I mean, that's the natural of order, isn't it? You could still be a supporter of Arsenal, Man United, Chelsea, West Brom, Newcastle, Liverpool, Man City, Fulham, and then you can support your club. You know, Chicago Fire, New York Red Bulls, Atlanta Silverbacks, and all those fun things. See, if you're a Euro snob, you're not worth the time. If you are a guy that likes soccer regardless where it's played, hey, welcome aboard. I'm right here. I'm right here with you. And that's all I can say about that. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Matt Goschert from the Massive Report covering the Columbus Crew from SB Nation. I also want to thank my good friend Ryan Martin, play voice of the Atlanta Silverbacks of the NASL. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. This has been the 200th episode of the regular Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. Join me next week as I will be discussing topics, and at the same time, we'll review the Red Bull Arsenal game. It should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. It should be plenty of fun to discuss. Once again, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to tonight's show. And as always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you so much for being with me tonight. I will talk to you later. Bye for now, everybody.